Did you have an opportunity to talk with people who were the so-called experts of the time, of the era, that also looked at this? And, of course, they probably came up with different thoughts and theories than you were working on. But were you able to share ideas with anybody, or did you have to go at this alone?
It was an uphill battle. I have since, in the last 5 or 6 years, I've had some support from some of the bigger names in the.
I guess you could call it the field?
The field, yeah, I suppose so. But in the beginning, no. Everyone thought that I was way off base. No one wanted to hear about dividing souls and two halves to the mind, and that was not on their radar at all. But eventually, I won over a lot of converts, because what I showed them was that in all these different modern reports of near-death experiences and past life regression, I showed them reports in other people's published books about divided soul experiences. There's a number of books, near-death experience books, that actually have people saying, during this process, I actually divided. I was two people. I was two things at the same time. I was watching my other self do this while I was doing something.
Wait a minute. Now, tell me a little bit about this. How did this happen?
Well, this is something that is found in I have this all written very carefully in my second book, The Lost Secret of Death. There are at least, I believe, 3 or 4 of the major near-death experience researchers that have published in some of their books. They've published reports of people that they during their near-death experience, they actually divide in two. They see another self, and that other self is going up on a different direction. They're doing one thing, and their other self is doing something.
Identical, different personality? What is it?
Well, they only identified them as being the other half of themselves.
The other half, okay.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes they would describe that other self as being having characteristics that I would associate with the conscious mind, and other times they would do the opposite and describe it as having characteristics that I would associate with the unconscious.
Now, as you studied this then for now some 20 years, 21 years, what makes you think, Peter, that you have discovered the secret of death when so many other people can't figure it out?
Well, I think that what I've done, if anything, I've rediscovered. And the reason for that is simply because there's so much correlation that I've found. The first thing that struck me was that in all the ancient cultural traditions of various different peoples, back 2,000-4,000 years ago, they all talked about human beings being composed of three things. They had a body, and then they had two non-physical components, both of which sound like souls. Basically, I would describe them as souls, and they would both survive death. And as they would die, these two non-physical components, these two souls, would divide apart. They would go off and they would do different things. They would have different kinds of afterlife experiences.
Could you have one soul go to, like, the so-called heaven, the other go to hell?
It was more like one soul would go on to reincarnate, and the other soul would go on to either heaven or hell. That seemed to be what it would be most of the time. Sometimes they would simply say that one soul would disappear and the other soul would either reincarnate or go on to heaven or hell.
And divide again? Let's say it reincarnated, went into another human being.
Well, when it reincarnates again, yeah, then that person, suddenly they have two halves, and then when they go to the end of that life and they die, they divide again.
Same thing happens. Huh?
So there is some question as to, you know, where they get their other half back again.
Or maybe it splits.
Maybe it splits again, right.
That's an interesting thing. Now, have you talked to anybody about this?
Well, there is some idea in the Hindu religion that the two halves come back together again and split apart again. So that is another variation on it.
I want to learn more about that, because I haven't heard. And this is what you would call the binary soul doctrine, I guess, right?
The binary soul doctrine, right. Now, the interesting thing to me was that in a great number of these cases, of these different cultures, they would describe their two souls the same way that modern science now describes the conscious and the unconscious, or the way that...
Now, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. We have the conscious mind, the subconscious mind, and we're dealing with the same entity, yet two different things.
I like that.
They also seem to have characteristics similar to the way science describes the right hemisphere of the brain and the left hemisphere of the brain. So I think that all these are different words actually for the same thing.
Now, what's the significance of having these two, I'll call them two souls?
Mm-hmm. What's the significance of
that? Yeah, I mean,
what
what's the function?
Why are we created that way?
Yeah, why? What's the use? What does it do?
Well, I think that it's basically it's the way that everything is created. You know, if you look around the world, you see we live in a binary universe. Our species is divided into two halves, male and female. You know, the year is divided in summer and winter. The world is divided into hemispheres of day and hemispheres of night.
A lot of star systems have binary star systems.
And they think that maybe ours does too.
Yes.
I just think that that's the way that everything is created. I think that to some degree it's sort of a division of labor kind of thing. That you have the two halves of the mind that they play off of each other. Each half does something very well, and then it has almost like its equal opposite half, and they work together as a team, or they're supposed to anyway.
Peter, how do you feel about those that do not believe in an afterlife? They figure, this is it. We die. That's it.
Well, that is, it's a difficult position to take and still expect a culture to behave healthily.
I mean, are you sad for them?
Well, I can't be sad for everyone having every kind of an opinion in the world, because that's going to happen. People are going to have all kinds of opinions. I look at it more along the lines of how does it affect the society. You know, if you have a society in which the majority of the people do not believe that there is anything that if there's no life after death, then that starts really affecting the decisions that they make while they're alive. If they think that there's no consequence for what they do when they're alive,
then
the whole question about, well, why should I, follow rules? Why should I follow laws? Why should I follow morality? And then when these same people start thinking, well, not only am I not going to be here, 100 years from now, but a million years from now, none of this is going to be here, so what does anything matter? And then, it's a free-for-all. No one sees any consequences for anything, and all of a sudden, you have a lot of death and destruction and mayhem.